to Immunize Wisely on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Ingrid Castle, Director of Vaccination Liberation, and our websites are vaccinetruth.com, vaclib.org, short for Vaccination Liberation, vaclib.org, and my personal website where I pay my bills from and I help people recover their health is humbleweed.net. Anyway, I heard while I was gone last week, I was redoing my office and I had to totally rip out the floor. And so my office was all over the place and there was no way I could do a show last week. So I had Sally take over the show. And I heard there was a lot of problems with the fact that she had a more unusual guest than she usually has. That, let me just put it that way. And so I was told this is not to happen again. But I found the archive pretty interesting myself. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. But I understand that Republic Broadcasting, at least I was told, is not coast to coast, and it's certainly not Jeff Rentz. So, and that if we're going to talk about anything of the unseen and stuff based on faith, it's God and Jesus Christ, and anything beyond that is, you know, subject to ridicule and possibly leaving the network. So, with that said, I mean, I couldn't help, when I first heard, I was laughing. I came back Monday night to a slew of phone calls, so I had to admit that I found it a little humorous, but it was no laughing matter, apparently. So anyhow, I want to mention that we do have a chat room, and the chat room is immunizewisely.chatandgo.com, and Mer Bailey has been so gracious as to host that chat room, and we often put links to important information we discuss. And I'm going to have to try to recreate some of the links. Both my guest and I were mesmerized looking at the millions of people protesting these COVID lockdown orders and social distancing in London and in Berlin. And Del Bigtree was streaming it. There's YouTubes on it before they take them down. Pretty soon it's going to be on BitChute probably, or Brighteon. But I know in London they had people like Vernon Coleman on, David Icke, Del Bigtree, and in Berlin our own RFK Jr. and Mary Holland were speakers. And, I mean, you know, it was wall-to-wall people. I mean, people traveled from all over, from other countries. I even heard there was a big protest in Paris and in Denmark. And I'm sure in other parts of the world, I mean, people are getting restless. And I know we in America are thankful we have our guns because, you know what? When it comes down to it, there will be possibly a civil war because people are not going to, you know, stay closed up, you know, say that, you know, we can't go to church, say that we can't, you know, open our barbershop. I mean, this is not going to happen again. We realize that, you know, the numbers do not justify the lockdown. They never did. And that it was, you know, all planned way in advance. Documents are coming forward, of course, where this was all planned way in advance, even, you know, back 20 years ago. So with that said, I would encourage you to actually search for the protests that were happening today. The speakers were inspiring. I found myself mesmerized and wishing we had more of that juice here. But they're looking for, you know, a lot of people worldwide are really mesmerized by the Q phenomenon. They've been reading it and following it. You'll see all over the world flags honoring our country and our freedom. You know, I get teary-eyed. I can't help it. It's really moving to me to see that the push for sovereignty and freedom that our country has inspired, and that a lot of people worldwide are paying attention to the Trump presidency and the Q movement. So, and the censorship that's obviously happening here too. So we're uniting patriots all worldwide are uniting, and it's an exciting time to be alive. So I heard that JoJo Sally's guest, the audio was really poor, and that he'd like to come on and share with us some of this positive news, which I'm all about. So I'm looking at bringing him on next week for a half hour. So you can look forward to a more clear audio with JoJo on my show this next Saturday. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest. I have Brett Wilcox on, and he is married to Chris, the love of his life, since 1989, and they were blessed with four children, and they have three grandchildren, and he is the author of We're Monsanto, Feeding the World Lie After Lie, and he has books one and two on with that same title. And then the more recent book is Jabbed, How the Vaccine Industry, Medical Establishment, and Government Stick It to You and Your Family. And back in 2014, Brett and his son David, who was then 15 years old, they ran across the country promoting a GMO-free USA and world. And Brett has worked as a licensed professional counselor for over 20 years until he was fired in April 2020 for questioning the official COVID-19 narrative. So much of what he shares is found on his website, runningthecountry.com. So welcome to Immunize Wisely, Brett. I'm so thankful that you agreed to come on after all that you've been through this year.
Ingrid, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here with you.
Yeah, I know it's an exciting time to be alive, but also a challenging time. I know a lot of people that are going through the kind of changes you're going through too, wondering, where am I going to move to? Where is it going to be friendly for me to speak my truth? I know we even discussed where I live, we have tons of people flooding into this area like it's the last vestige of freedom in the country, the Inland Northwest. And I know there's been talk forever about creating a separate state of just the Inland Northwest, including portions of Oregon and Washington and eastern Montana and Idaho. So, that could still happen. You never know, because this is where most of the freedom fighters seem to gravitate. But anyway, you're welcome to join. It's just getting a little crowded here, that's all. We just have to, yes. Imagine combining households under one roof, huh?
I'm actually looking at Utah County because I've got three grandkids in Utah County. And I've heard that that is the fastest growing county in the United States. So speaking of getting crowded, it seems like I'm moving in that direction. I currently live in Sitka, Alaska, which is on Baranof Island, which is in the center of the Tongass National Rainforest in southeast Alaska. And it's a piece of natural sanity. I mean, it's, nature is at its best here, although it can be pretty wet and pretty depressing sometimes when you live in a forest and you step outside the door and you're on the trail and sharing the trail with bears and eagles and other wildlife. It's easy to get grounded and get back to what's real and what's wholesome and what's been, the real thing in this world for forever now.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was something I had just written. It seems like we're on a parallel talking paths, but I was just writing an email inviting a whole bunch of friends on a big camping trip I'm doing for that very reason, going way up in the woods, without any facilities. So
yeah.
Anyway, it's important to get away and get grounded, away from civilization and just be in nature for a couple of days. It's very therapeutic for our souls. So But, you know, you and I are both in this movement to wake people up on the vaccine issue. And certainly you have a story. I know that, you know, you have a story about Monsanto and what woke you up to that. So, you know, I'd actually like to go a little bit from the beginning, because that was your first book. And here you walked across or ran across the country with your 15-year-old son. And that was, I'm sure, an incredible adventure. I remember, you know, seeing some videos of that at the time. And, you know, obviously there was some incentive for you to speak out. So what was that? What was it about, you know, being exposed to GMO? Did you know someone that got ill from it? Or, you know, what was the impetus for diving into that one?
I have to go back to about, when did we move up here? We moved up here in 2000, moved to Sitka, Alaska in about 2000. It was about 2 years later that I really got into the study of food, researching food and diets. And based on everything that I had read, I started to move to a whole foods, plant-based diet. And all of that research led me towards Monsanto and GMOs and industrial agriculture and glyphosate and what they were doing to the agricultural environment here in the United States and around the world, and Indian farmer suicide, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the primary impetus, of course, as a father, as a husband and father, is my own kids and my own family. When I'm thinking about the things that I'm putting on the table for my kids to eat, is it poison or is it not? Is it healthy or is it not? And I remember taking my young children into the grocery store, and we would look at a carrot, and I would say, is this healthy? And then I'd say, who made it? And they'd say, God made it. And I'd say, is it healthy? They'd say, yes. And then they'd go to some prepackaged thing. And I would say, who made it? And they'd say, a factory made it. And I'd say, well, is it healthy? And they'd say, no. So it was a pretty primary education back then, a pretty black and white education. But it was pretty darn accurate. When you take things that nature gives us or that God gives us, And we eat it as much as possible in that whole and natural state. And of course, there's exceptions to that. But when we do that, then we're honoring our bodies, we're honoring our temples, we're honoring our relationship with the earth. And when we get away from that and we find ourselves eating the standard American diet with all the white flour, the white sugar, the soda pop, and everything else, then we fall into the diseases of affluence. And then we get into the pesticides, and then we get into the genetically modified organisms, and realize that mankind, under the auspices of the religion of scientism, we've now taken science, tweaked a gene or two, and then had the audacity to claim that as a man-made invention, and then file a patent on it. And I am a deeply spiritual person, and to realize that human beings were bastardizing nature and then claiming it as their own and then forcing farmers to buy it in one manner or another, and all of the trickle down effects of that agricultural model, I was my wife doesn't like me to say pissed, but that's what I was. So I got, the more I got into this, the more I thought, you know, I should do something with this. I was also really enjoying trail running here in Sitka, Alaska. Once I learned that I could run on a trail, I went from being a 2-mile-a-day runner to a 12-mile runner, and just very easily on the trails. It just passed so beautifully, just a wondrous experience. Anyone who's run on the trails in the mountains understands what I'm talking about, what a beautiful spiritual experience it is. And my son was growing up very much the same way. He was loving running. And when he was about 13 years old, we came upon a website where a young woman, I think she was 18 years old, had just completed her run across the United States. Mm-hmm. And I read that to our son, David, who was 13, and said, look what she did. Shortly thereafter, David said, I want to do that. And we thought, hey, that's really cute. Go back and do your homework. But he didn't let it drop. He kept on bringing it up, and And it's, you know, of course, running across the United States is not a small endeavor. It takes a lot of planning, a lot of money, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of risk. And I realized, I said to Chris, I said, do we want to raise our children so that they have dreams and we tell them, hey, go do your homework. That's not for us. That's, we're not those kinds of people. We're not the kind of people that go after our dreams. Or are we going to say, okay, David, this is what this involves. And if you're really serious about this, then we're going to do it for you. We're going to make the sacrifice and we're going to make it happen. And he, you know, we actually had that conversation and David came back the next day and said, I want to do this. So when he was 15, we had gotten everything in order. And he was all about running and I was about running for a purpose so that we would make a difference in the world. And at that time, my primary focus was Monsanto and GMOs and the poisoning, whether it's poisoning of our bodies or poisoning of the environment. So I thought if I'm going to go on the road, I'm going to go on the road as an author so that I've got some authority, some credentials so that I can go out there and say, I wrote this book. I could pass out copies of the book and we could speak as we went, speak at different events as we did. In fact, we ran into St. Louis the morning of the March Against Monsanto there at the headquarters of Monsanto. We got there a half hour or so before the march started and David and I both spoke at that event. So, we did the whole thing, 20 miles a day, 6 days a week on average, and finished on our 25th wedding anniversary. It was a nice celebration of our 25th wedding anniversary. And, you know, it's a beautiful story, but it's also a very, very difficult story because nobody should be running across the country on the side of a road that leans in one direction sideways. It's an asymmetrical run for 3,000 miles. It's not good for you. It's not healthy. It's not safe. That said, we did it. And I will forever be grateful for the experiences that we had because we chose to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was. So how long did it take you?
6 months, just about 6 months to the day.
Mm-hmm. Because of course there were speaking engagements and breaks, but yeah, you went across the country. So did you take what route did you take? 40 or a little higher?
We were on 40, and my numbers are vague at this point. We started in I'm embarrassed that I can't remember. We started just south of LA, and we got onto we ran up the LA River there, and soon we were on Route 66, and pretty much went along Route 66 until we cut a corner up through a piece of Texas into the panhandle of Oklahoma, and into Kansas, and eventually finished in New Jersey in Oceanside. With a really final, a wonderful final day's run where we had several people running with us, and they had a big event for us there when we finished, and we gave speeches and photographs and interviews and things, and then from there we ran into the ocean together barefooted, and I was there with my wife and 13-year-old daughter. They were our support crew, and Chris drove the truck, pulling the trailer that we slept in at night, which was in and of itself a major event for us because we're not truck people, we're not trailer people, we'd never done that before. So it was a huge learning experience.
A huge undertaking. Oh my gosh, yes. Especially bringing the whole family along too.
Yes.
So please stay tuned. You're listening to Brett Wilcox on Immunize Wisely.
Extendivite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Nikki, great product. Have to try it for a few months to see results. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I have noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from carpal tunnel. I will continue to buy the product. Ken Peaks, 5 out of 5 stars. Works as advertised. This formula is very powerful. Be careful to follow directions. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure has stabilized, and my lower edema has reduced. Lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. Thank you. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back. Welcome back. We have Brett sharing about the culmination of his run across the United States, how they go from one ocean to the other, end up in New Jersey, and it was quite exciting. This was back in 2014. It took him 6 months. And that is really some feat, for sure, to be able to do that and to raise awareness about GMOs and actually do that level of research so people actually understand how harmful this industry is. I mean, I've heard that people at Monsanto won't even eat GMO. They all eat organic.
I've heard that too. I don't know whether there's any truth to that, but certainly it would make sense. They're smart people. They're intelligent people. We know that the people that are doing the vaccine trials don't test the vaccines on their own children.
Right. Yeah, it's the same thing. You know, it's really sad. It's for this to be, it all be about money and control, you know. I mean, this is the story of electricity, too. You know, Tesla had a vision of everyone having free power. And then, you know, the same group of people got in there and wanted to control it so that no one would have power unless they paid into, you know, the central system.
Right.
That was,
right.
Same game. So You know, I'm actually anticipating a future where all of that goes away, believe it or not. I think it's going to happen. The big awakening is upon us. So, but, you know, we needed people like you and me to just, you know, start the awakening process. And it's important. And it's important that you actually took the time to show your children that our dreams and our visions for the future are going to be supported by our parents.
Yes. Yeah, that was very important to me, to let them know that if they wanted to do something, they had the capacity to do it.
Mm-hmm. And that certainly brought your family closer together, to be able to support each other in their dreams and visions for a better world, because we all come in here. I believe we're all born here not to eat bonbons and watch TV, but to actually have a soul-driven purpose to make the world a better place on some level.
Ingrid, we either had to grow closer together as a family, or we would have killed each other. So imagine this. We've got a little teeny travel trailer that barely fits all of us. So there's two adults, two teenagers, and two dogs. And we have to accommodate that space, one little teeny kitchen space. If you can imagine what these little trailers are like, one little teeny bathroom, one little teeny area that the teenagers shared, and then our little teeny bedroom, and then all of our stuff in there. And if we did not learn how to respect each other's space and respect each other's opinions and personalities, it would not have worked. And it was not easy. There were some times, some tense times, where we had to say, we're not running right now until we get whatever's going on between the kids, until we get that figured out. And we would stop, and on two or three occasions, we stopped for a couple of hours and said, we're not moving until we can get something changed here so that we can experience what we're experiencing in a good, peaceful, and positive way. And I have to say that doing that was not our primary purpose, but it was probably one of the greatest benefits of doing the run, because up until that point, our son could be the nicest guy in the world, except to his little sister. And on this occasion, the little sister was doing great service to help David reach his goal of running across the United States, and David was not responding in a respectful way. And mm-hmm. So we had to take care of that and help David grow up, essentially. It was not easy. It wasn't fun. But that was just in the beginning, maybe the beginning month or 6 weeks. And after that, they grew very, very close, and they became best friends throughout the rest of their teenage years and continue to be best friends today. So it was a powerful personal experience on a family level.
Wow, thanks for sharing. That's so important, you know, to be the parents and the the adults in the situation, guiding your children into, you know, growing beyond these petty quarrels and showing love and respect instead of judgments. We're all different. I mean, obviously, each one of your children is unique and different and has different, you know, idiosyncrasies, and it's important that we accept that and we work around that.
Yes. So, yeah, it was not something that would have taken place had we continued on in our regular lives, where it's rush, rush, rush to work or mm-hmm. to school, to our sporting events, to our activities, to our devices, and to bed, where we're barely communicating with each other the way we do in our modern families. This was right. A situation where everything else got sidelined, and we were in a little teeny cramped space living together. And having to share that entire experience together. So it was quite amazing in that it worked and that we grew closer to each other as a result.
Wow, thank you for sharing. So, I want to go ahead and go right into the vaccine industry, because I'm sure you have a story. You probably even vaccinated your children initially. I'm guessing a lot of people do. Maybe you were wise right from the beginning, or your wife did some research, but it's not always the case. So what is your story with the whole vaccine thing? I mean, just waking up on it.
I think our story is fairly typical. I think as young parents, we had a sense that something was wrong with the whole program. We had a sense why were our healthy children, who were perfect in every way, being injected with things that we weren't really sure about, but we had been taught, we had been indoctrinated that vaccines were, the propaganda that we all get. And so we were very deeply indoctrinated in that church. And on that point, I have to pause and kind of laugh when you say a week or two ago you had a guest on who went out in left field because he went off in a religious direction besides Christianity. But I have to laugh at that, because what we're talking about right now when we talk about vaccines is a religion. And mm-hmm. it's a pagan religion. It's a dangerous religion. It's a religion based on human sacrifice. And mm-hmm. we are all so deeply ingrained in this society, in that religion, that we can't even see it for what it is. So it's weird when people get on other channels where they're doing these I love vaccines sort of mantra, and vaccines are safe and effective, and trust your doctor, and only your doctor knows. We have to be aware that we're listening to kind of a cult-like experience, and it is truly a very, very dangerous religion based on the principle of human sacrifice, where they say one in a million will be sacrificed to protect all the others, and we know that figure is bogus, because we know that anytime you inject poison into anyone, there's going to be damage and injury to one degree or another. So I wanted to throw that in there, and I'll get back to your question now.
Mm-hmm, sure.
We vaccinated our kids. I remember various things when I was young and dumb. One thing I remember is that one of our children was on the living room floor, and I watched her periodically from time to time, and just noticed that she was zoned out. She was off in another space. And it deeply concerned me, but I had no idea what to think of it. I remember mentioning it to someone at work. I said, "This is really weird." And she said, "Well, you should keep an eye on that." But of course, I had no idea. I couldn't think about going to vaccines. Two of our four children suffered and continue to suffer from severe eczema. They would wake up in the morning with bloody sheets where they had been scratching their arms and their elbows so bad at night. And it was an ongoing issue, and of course now we all know that eczema is a vaccine injury. We know that clear back in the 1950s that if you had eczema, no one else in the family was supposed to get vaccinated. It was a contraindication for further vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know that. So anyway, as I was gaining more understanding about GMOs and food, I was also seeing more information pop up about vaccines. And when we were running across the United States, we met several parents of kids with autism. And at that point, I knew that many people had made that connection. And I came right out and said, "Was it the vaccines?" And most of the parents said, "Yeah, absolutely." And I remember one or two of them in graphic detail, having spent time with them and seeing their child or children as adults, and seeing the terrible, terrible devastation and loss of potential, the crime that had been committed against these kids under the guise of public health. And so I remember saying to David and Chris and Olivia on the run, I said, "We're running across the country talking about GMOs. And in the 6 months on the road, we met less than 10 people who opposed our mission. Nobody wanted to eat poisonous food. Nobody wanted to eat patented food. Nobody wanted to eat food that was either bioengineered to withstand glyphosate or to produce poisons that killed bugs. Nobody wanted to do that. Very, very few people thought that was a great idea. But I said back then while we were running, I said, if we ran it across the country on a vaccine platform where we talked about the problems, the corruption in the vaccine industry, we would get a very different response. We would face a lot of anger, and we would face a lot of discrimination. We would face a lot of hatred, because that is something that most people have not yet woken up to. So that was the climate of 2014, and then we finished in July 2014. August 2014, William Thompson, the CDC whistleblower, came out of the closet and announced online that he and his colleagues had held a garbage can party and thrown away the data that showed their research linking the MMR vaccine to an increase in autism, particularly among black boys, but among all children in general. And that really awakened me, because I was going back to my job as a mental health clinician working at a hospital. And that hospital had just instituted a mandatory flu vaccine policy. I knew I was going back to that mandatory flu vaccine policy, and I knew that I would not be getting that flu jab. And I also knew that our oldest daughter was, and her husband were about to bless us with our first grandchild. And so I was thinking about the fact that they had been raised in the same indoctrinated way with vaccines as Chris and I had been raised. And they were about to bring a child into the world under those same false beliefs that they needed to protect, they needed to participate in the ordinance, the religious ordinance of vaccination, to protect against the evil spirits of viruses and bacteria, or all hell would break loose in that child, and terrible, terrible things would happen, because that's what we're all taught to believe. And I had all of those things came together at that moment, and I realized that I had a mission to not only protect my granddaughter, who was on the way, but also to protect humanity, my human brothers and sisters, just as we had done with GMOs as we ran across the country. I felt it my mission to protect my human brothers and sisters. Now, once again, becoming a parent once again, or a grandparent in this case, to a child who I'd never met but who I already loved, I wanted to make sure that I could do everything possible to help my daughter and her husband see that what they had been taught was wrong, and that they needed to leave the Church of Vaccinology. And so I started to research. That 2014, 2015 was an odd time. I wrote and finished up a second book on Monsanto, Where Monsanto Feeding the World Lie After Lie, Book 2. And then in a period from about January or February 2015, no, I'm getting a year out wrong here. In the September of 2015, I had met a woman named Kristen Chevrier in Utah, and she invited me to come down to Utah to meet Andrew Wakefield, because he was speaking in Utah County. And my daughter and son-in-law live there, and I schemed, thinking to myself, if I go down there and I go watch Andy Wakefield, and if I can drag my daughter and son-in-law to that, that will do a whole lot to help them wake up and see where this is going. So in the process, I finished up one book on Monsanto. I started my book on Jabbed, and for a period of about 9 months, in the wee hours of the morning, because I was still working a full-time job and being a parent, I cranked out Jabbed, and it was a monumental effort. It's about 320 pages. It's got nearly 1,000 references in it. It's highly referenced. It's highly fact-checked, if you will. I hate that phrase because of what it means nowadays, but but it was good. It was really solid, and I got tons of amazing endorsements on the book, and people very highly placed in this movement honored it and recognized it as really an encyclopedic work, and it really is. It's quite unique in that every one of its 25 chapters zeroes in on one specific part of the vaccine religion. And one chapter is on just that, the vaccine religion. One is on fear and how fear is used. One is on conflicts of interest. One is on indoctrinating doctors, and one is on the role of the media. I've got an entire chapter in there on vaccines and racism, because racism and vaccines go together. They, as I said earlier, vaccine manufacturers do not test these things on their own kids. Usually they go to poor countries and find people of color, often illiterate, and bribe them with $10 or $15 and lie to them, do not provide informed consent, and they jab their kids and then leave them without protection or without compensation for the devastation that follows. Or they find kids in family services, orphanages here in the United States, and they go in and they work their devilish magic with those kids.
Or, Brett, what about the schedule? You can go to the CDC website, and they have an accelerated schedule for the indigenous population, what they consider most at risk. And most at risk are the poor people, the indigenous, the Indians, all those people, which are generally people of color.
And aside from being people of color, people who experience poverty live in a chronic state of being immunocompromised. So we've got the duplicity and the hypocrisy of these vaccine zealots saying that we all need to be vaccinated to protect the immunocompromised, but in practice, there are virtually no people who are exempt because they are immunocompromised. And if you're growing up with poverty and you don't have enough fruits and vegetables on board, you are immunocompromised. These little kids that are getting sick all the time, they are immunocompromised. So when they go to poorer communities and pull out the needles, they're going to experience a greater degree, greater severity of harm in these kids, just like Archie Calacarinos, I believe I'm saying his name correctly.
Calacarinos.
The doctor who went to Australia and woke up to the horrifying experience when he realized that what they were doing when they went out into the outback and rounded up these kids, sometimes hunted them down in their vehicles, jumped out of the vehicles and jabbed them with everything they had, and then watched them die. He realized it was because these kids were primarily malnourished, not having nearly enough vitamin C as well as other nutrients. And so he wrote the book Every Second Child, which was based on the idea that every other kid they vaccinated died. And so when they talk about, you know, even nowadays when Melinda Gates says we've got to give this vaccine to black people in the United States because historically they are the people who have been discriminated against because they haven't had access to adequate services, she's got to know how that really is a slap in the face of vaccine-informed black people who know very well the history of how their people have been used as the guinea pigs to bring medicines and bring vaccines to market.
Correct. Yes, this is unfortunately true. I mean, it's... I mean, all of this truth is coming out now. I even watched a video about Melinda Gates, you know, likely being a man and someone that everyone knows. It's very bizarre. I mean, you know, I'm just saying the pictures were pretty darn convincing. And we know that, you know, Bill Gates has a criminal record from his younger years of raping a young boy in the back of his car. So, I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, these devils, they're really devilish. What can I say? But, I mean, Archie was a hero of mine. And I don't know if you realize this, but Alan Yurko, you probably heard about the Alan Yurko story. He kind of put shaken baby syndrome on the map. And before you really woke up on this whole thing, this is back in 2003, 2004, he got together a case, an evidentiary hearing, you know, that he was going to present all this stuff, right? Uh-huh. And we were all invited, and we were kind of hemming and hawing, you know, like, are we going to really all go to Florida? Well, Archie Calacarinos decided he was going to go at his own expense all the way from Australia to be an expert witness in Alan Yurko's case. And as soon as we heard that, everyone in the movement dropped everything and got their tickets. And we had a huge gathering of minds there in Florida, Orlando, back in, it was actually summer of 2004. It was amazing. Oh, just so you know, a little history.
I wish I had been awake back then. That sounds just amazing.
Yeah, he gave a separate talk for all of us, you know, because for many of us, he was, you know, an icon.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yep. So, yeah, this is so in your book. So you mentioned Christine. I never can say her last name. So that is Utah County. That's where Provo is, right?
Yes, that's correct. BYU, my son-in-law works at BYU, Brigham Young University. And yeah, they're 20 miles from there. So that's likely where we're going to move. And that's where we're from originally. We're from northern Utah. We came up to Alaska 20 years ago for an adventure. And it has been an amazing adventure. It's been a great place to live. The school system has been good. It's been generally a wholesome experience for our kids. And our three daughters each served a year in a foreign exchange with the Rotary program. One went to Sweden, one went to Bolivia, and one went to Thailand. So, and they all got that year-long experience, which was amazing in different ways because they were vastly different exchanges. And David got his big thing by running across the United States. So it's being here and raising our kids here has been a wonderful thing. And there are so many good things about Sitka, Alaska. And if our family could continue to live here, I would want to continue to live here. But, you know, the draw of family, and when everyone is down south and we're not, right, it loses some of its sweetness.
Well, I'll have to admit, you know, once the grandchildren start happening, you're going to want to be around for, they need help, you know, with children being young and working, and it's really healthy for the grandchildren to be, I mean, the grandparents to be around the grandchildren. It seems to, in my experience, it seems to kind of skip a generation, and grandparents and grandchildren are always very tightly bonded, you know, in families that are, you know, that opportunity happens anyway. So
life is very, very short, and there are many, many mountains yet to be climbed, and I would like to climb a good share of them with my grandchildren.
Yeah, exactly. And that you have that opportunity. Yes. Yeah, it's interesting because I have cousins in that area too. You know, you may not know this, but I was my mother was a Monson.
I did not know that.
Yep, that's her maiden name, is Monson. That's a good Mormon family, and the All Reds, and, you know, anyway. But she was the black sheep of the family, what can I say? She kind of left, but her brother stuck with it. He just recently passed. So, but my cousins, you know, are down there in the Provo area, so... Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a beautiful area. And I think, so did you go to the conference? So you mentioned meeting Andy Wakefield. Wasn't he a speaker at a conference you put together?
Kristen Chevrier had him be the primary speaker at a conference in 2015. But I think he's been back to Utah two or three times. And I think he's going to be back in Utah in September again. I'm not sure. But yeah,
right. Yeah. But when you had your son and daughter, was it your daughter and son-in-law, or anyhow, when they were going to have their first daughter, your granddaughter?
Yes.
It was the conference that you had them go to, right?
It was just an evening presentation by Andy Wakefield.
Right. I know Laura Hayes gave a really excellent presentation at that same conference.
That would have come later.
Yeah,
That was not 2015. It was not the same event, but she did give a presentation later on, and yes, it was a fabulous speech. And I am a deep admirer of Laura Hayes. She can ruffle feathers from some people in our movement because she is so uncompromising and so apolitical. She says things exactly as they are with no strategy. It's like, this is the truth, and I'm going to speak.
Okay, hold on. We're coming up to a commercial break. I absolutely agree with you. So I'm listening to Brett Wilcox on Immunize Wisely.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
After about a month of Extendovite, I don't know what it is about the circulation factor. I was able to increase the weight, increase the amount of sets I could do. It has to do with the oxygen getting to the blood. You should market this as an athletic performance. And I don't change anything about my diet or anything. I just thought, this is amazing. Bilberry extract has got something called resveratrol in it, which is the same stuff that you get from red wine. It's also good for eyesight. And I was reading that the Royal Air Force during World War II would give their pilots bilberry jam so they could have better night vision stuff. This is amazing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
End of the first hour, and that's really fascinating history. I mean, we've spent like a whole hour on history, and there's so much more to cover, things that you put in your book, and I appreciate how you laid out JAB differently, which is why I was interested in getting a quantity, because I knew, as very much similar to my mother, who was an English teacher and, deep into philosophy and psychology, that as a counselor and your understanding of the human psyche and the way people think, that you incorporated those aspects into your book. Because that's the biggest hurdle we have. I mean, we can do all the science and how they're bad, but, unlocking, the cognitive dissonance and, getting to the root of why people have a hard time facing the reality that these are literally injections of poison. And
yes,
I mean,
yes.
It's like a snake bite. I always say it's like a snake bite. You have foreign protein coupled with all these other noxious substances, and it's never properly treated, you know?
And on that point, you are doing such a great job of describing the reality of vaccination, but the way we are trained, neurolinguistically trained, with the word vaccine, whenever we hear the word vaccine, we figuratively fall to our knees, and we figuratively move into a state of worship. We turn off our critical thinking skills, and all of the things that we've heard about vaccines, about how they've saved millions of lives, and we don't have polio, we don't have smallpox, all the propaganda, it's all in there. And it's all triggered just by hearing the word vaccine. So anytime we have a conversation with someone and we use that word, we are at an immediate disadvantage because it triggers all of the conditioning that goes along with that word. And so anytime we can help people understand that there is a difference between the concept and the theory of vaccination, a difference between those things and the reality of what vaccination really is, which is a concoction of chemicals. And if you analyze if you take a look at each one of those chemicals individually and separately and read the literature on each one of those chemicals, and you say, oh my heck, this is a carcinogen. This is a preservative that is used to embalm dead people. This is a retrovirus. This is a heavy metal, and we know that this heavy metal induces all these harms in the body and all the inflammation and the encephalopathy, and we go on and on and on. And we start realizing that we're talking about an entire concoction of chemicals. And then from there, we can start to awaken people's minds so that the word vaccine means something different. So when they hear it, they don't think this is a sacrament that's going to protect my child from evil spirits. They think this is poison, because that's really the truth of the matter. This is
Well, did you ever see recently someone posted the summary of a conversation that they had when they dialed poison control, and they just took a package insert and they decided to run by some of the ingredients in the package insert. And they asked the person there if, they went through each ingredient and they said, would it be okay if we injected any of these ingredients into our child? And, after going through the list, the man on the other end was shocked, why are you asking all these questions? Yeah, this is a dangerous subject. Is it, one thing after another, dangerous, and, just all the side effects if you were to eat it or inject it. And anyway, the long and short, I had it right. If I had it right in front of me, I'd actually do a couple of quotes from it, but it was good. And at the end, she says, well, why are you asking these questions? And he says, well, I don't think it should be legal to inject any of these things into our children. And he says, yeah, heavens no. But that's not, anyway, ended up revealing that these are the ingredients in vaccines, and the guy at poison control was absolutely shocked. He was floored, and he started doing research and woke him up to share the information with his kids and grandkids. But anyhow, we have a commercial break, so stay tuned for the second hour.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.